Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Transportation Finance and Policy Committee. It's great to see everybody. I know we have several members that are en route, but we have a bit of an abbreviated meeting today because we have session at 10. So we'll aim to end about 9:45 or so, so people can get to session on time. So even though we're in the same building, so we have a little bit of an advantage over our colleagues in the SOB. So our agenda today is, we have three items. Two will be pretty quick, and then we'll have a third item, which is an overview of some basic transportation finance and policy concepts, mainly finance, sort of transportation finance 101 from our nonprofit staff, but or nonpartisan staff. We're a nonprofit too. So we'll start with introductions of members and staff, and then we'll just go over our committee rules and procedures, and then we'll get into the body of the hearing, and then I'll make some announcements about next week as well, because we have a couple of bills we'll be starting with next week. So I'll start. I'm State Representative Frank Hornstein, and I represent District 61A. That includes parts of the downtown Minneapolis area, several neighborhoods adjacent to downtown, and then a few neighborhoods in uptown Minneapolis. So if you're familiar with those areas, that's where I represent. By the way, we'd like you to not just say your district term or whatever, but why you're here. What interests you about transportation? Are there different issues in your district that you would like to make sure are addressed, or broader issues that are addressed? So we'd like to have folks do that as well. And so for me, I've had sort of a lifelong interest in this issue ever since my dad took me to the Greater Cincinnati Airport, where I grew up, to watch the planes land when I was 4 years old. And then we took a trip to, for some reason, I don't know if it was a regularly scheduled train or a tourist train, but we went to Muncie, Indiana, I think, when I was also 3 or 4. So I really developed a strong interest as a kid in transportation, and that's carried through, throughout my life and career. But really, the issues that I'm most interested in are making sure that every mode of transportation is adequately funded, and that we're able to implement policies that really are truly statewide, where every corner of the state and every mode of transportation is able to succeed. We really have transportation is so key to our economic vitality, our quality of life, issues around equity, issues around climate. Transportation is the number one source of greenhouse gas emissions, so this is going to be a focus for us. But really making sure that everybody is included, all corners of the state. And I would also say that as we do our business together, I'm so pleased to see Representative Petersburg here and the peanut M&Ms. This is a staple of our meetings. And I do want to say how happy I am to see us all in person again. The last time we met as a transportation committee together was mid-March of 2020. So this is really almost 3 years since we've had those peanut M&Ms.
That's right.
So they tasted especially good today. And this committee has a real history of bipartisan cooperation. We don't always agree and sometimes have some pretty strong disagreements. But whether there have been Republican chairs or Democratic chairs ever since I've been here since 2002, there's always been really good communication, really good camaraderie. And unfortunately, that's a bit rare sometimes, but it's always been a consistent staple of this committee. So I thank Representative Petersburg for carrying on that tradition. And so we will continue to communicate and be in contact. And so, on that note, and then I'll pass it around, maybe we can start with, after I speak, Representative Fogelman, and then we'll come around, and I'd like both Representative Tapke and Representative Petersburg to maybe make some little longer comments, too, given your important leadership roles on this committee. But I did want to say that, and I want to particularly give Representative Olson a shout out, because I'll give you an example of where members of this committee can very constructively give their comments and make bills better. That's what this our goal is. This is what our process is. So a couple times last year, we had one bill where we were trying to rejigger tab fees. And Representative Olson talked about, just from his perspective, even in his vehicle, how this would affect him and some of his constituents personally. And, you know, we backed off of that proposal because, you know, he made some really good points. And we had another bill last year, my bill, in fact, around traffic and transportation safety. And, again, Representative Olson raised some, you know, concerns. He wasn't necessarily opposed to what we were doing, but, you know, how is this allocation that Driver and Vehicle Services was proposing, how is it going to be used? You know, really asked some good questions, and we kind of made some adjustments to that bill. So this is kind of an example of, you know, committee members making their views heard assertively and constructively, and really making, you know, really shaping legislation as our committee. So thank you for that, and I hope it's in that spirit that we'll continue our work on a bipartisan basis. So let's start with Representative Fogelman. We'll move around, and again, any comments you want to make about your background, your district, transportation issues that are of importance to you, that would be very helpful. Representative Fogelman, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Marge Fogelman, I represent House District 21B, Nobles, Jackson, Martin, Watonwan, and Cottonwood. Not being super political or governmental, transportation just sounded interesting, and I'm excited to get in and learn more about it.
Thank you. Welcome. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Bjorn Olson. I'm from 22A, so that's Fairmont area. That's Martin County, Faribault County, half of Watonwan, and a lot of Blue Earth County now. So excited to be here. This is my second term, but this is only my fifth in-person committee meeting, so I'm very excited to start notching up my in-person committee meetings. This is the only committee that I served on last year that I requested very highly to be in. It's along that same exact conversation that the chairman was talking about, bipartisanship. Everyone loves their roads and their bridges. Everyone likes, to a different degree, their trains and their planes, but this is one of the areas in which you can see and do a lot of really great things for the people of this state without having to get in a conversation and an argument every single time when you do it. So that's what I very much enjoy, and thank you, Chair Hornstein, for the way that you run this. I was disappointed to be in the minority, obviously, but when I knew that I was going to be with Chair Hornstein, I was yet again excited to continue doing this work for the people of Minnesota. So thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. Hudella. Thanks, Mr. Chair. Shane Hudella. I represent Hastings and Cottage Grove. It's Tony Juergens' old seat, for those that have been here more than a term. My first term, excited for transportation. We have some pretty significant projects in our district. Highway 61 project, which is the main line coming through town in our small town, and a fairly substantial project in Cottage Grove as well. So excited to be here and learn how it all works, how the roads get made. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you. And one of the highlights of the last, you know, well, pre-COVID times for me was going down to Hastings when we dedicated the bridge, and lots of great transportation issues down there. So, Representative Petersburg, and you can, again, if you want to have more extended comments, I would welcome that too.
But all right.
However you want to do it.
All right. Thank you so much. I appreciate that. Representative John Petersburg, I represent the towns of Owatonna, Waseca, Medford, down south of here, and I've been on transportation since I started in 2013 when Chair Hornstein was the chair then at that particular time. And one of the things that I've known for a long time is that transportation, and it doesn't matter if it's roads and bridges or not, but specifically roads and bridges, is so dependent. Everyone, whether you're day you're born till the day you die, are dependent upon those roads and bridges and transportation for every facet of your life. And so it's a real key position and agency and committee to be on because of that very reason. And yes, as Chair Hornstein said, we do have passion for various things, and we are going to come into some bills that are going to have a little bit more conflict than others. Now, but this is one of the committees in which we've been able to at least talk about it respectfully, and I anticipate that to continue on because it's important for us to explore our passions and to explore the things that we see are different, and we all come from different backgrounds, so we're going to have different views on that. But it's important for us to maintain that decorum, and I expect that it will. And so I appreciate Chair Hornstein and my camaraderie and ability to work with each other over the past few years, and I find him to be very honest and sincere in everything that he does. So I appreciate that, and just looking forward to working with you.
And back at you, too. So thank you so much, President Petersburg. We're not going to separate members from staff. We're just going to go in order here. So, Mr. Lee.
You, Mr. Chair and members, my name is Andrew Lee from House Fiscal Staff, and this will be my 11th session staffing transportation finance.
Mr. Chair and members, good morning. I'm Matt Burris with House Research. House Research provides drafting and legislative support and research services on a nonpartisan basis, similar to House Fiscal.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Enid Swigert. I'm the committee administrator, and this is my first session, so thrilled to be here. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much, Enid. Vice Chair.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. My name is Brad Tapke. I'm from Shakopee. Got elected first in 2018. I was honored to be the vice chair of transportation then, and happy to be back here working with Chair Hornsey now and Representative Petersburg. Ran to Representative Torkelson yesterday and got to give him a hard time because I miss having him on the committee as well. But transportation is critical, so I represent a southwest suburb and getting back and forth from the suburbs to the metro and get to the cities and back is a really important piece of what we all look at. And there's, in my opinion, not enough money to go around, do expansions to give everybody their own lane, getting back and forth. And so we need to make sure that we are focusing on options and transportation, different options for people to get back and forth from point A to point B at all points. So we need to continue working on that, investing in the future of transportation. I'm really excited to do it here with Chair Hornstein, and especially the incredible staff folks that we have working on this. So thank you all for what you do.
Hi, I'm Robin Schmidt. I'm the committee legislative assistant, and this is my second
And Robin will be with us for a couple more weeks, and we have a more permanent CLA who will be joining us middle part of the month, Kevin Petrie. So, but again, Robin will be with us certainly for all of next week and maybe the week after. We're not sure. Welcome.
Thank you. Jennifer Nelson, I'm the DFL researcher with this committee. This is my third biennium here, and I also cover capital investment and sustainable infrastructure.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Jeff Brand from St. Peter, Minnesota. I represent portions of Blue Earth County, Astoria County, and every inch of Nicollet County. You know, in my particular district, we've got township roads, we've got bus rapid transport, we've got obviously a lot of highways, Highway 14, Highway 169 that go through town, and then also we've got an airport and we've got train freight that goes through my district as well. So a lot's going on in my district, and you know, I think it's really important to highlight and thank you, Mr. Chair, for having in 2020. One of the last actual committee meetings was Highway 14 funding, and now that highway is half built, four lanes from Nicollet to New Ulm, and so I really appreciate the opportunities there to fully take care of that corridor of commerce. And you know, I think it's really important as we look forward to the future here and for funding. We're talking about not enough funding to go around, definitely also to consider township roads, because that's how we get our grain to market in my particular district and districts across the state.
Thank you for mentioning that. I think, and I talked with Representative Wilson about this earlier, and I'm glad you brought up townships. Townships and small cities, I think, are critical. And in terms of their infrastructure needs, and sometimes we can't lose sight of that when we look at some of the bigger picture issues, and so we'll certainly make sure that those voices are brought to this committee and heard. Representative Elkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, forget how we did. We turn these on or off? No, just leave them. They're fine. Okay.
You're good. It's not like the Senate. It's too complicated.
Yeah. So, Steve Elkins, I represent the western half of Bloomington. This is my third term on this committee. And I got interested in transportation at an early age because my dad was a Navy flight engineer in the Korean War and went on to work in the aircraft maintenance industry. And so I grew up around aircraft and ended up working my way through college as a ticket agent and baggage handler for TWA in Oakland, California. She got me interested at the time in the early 70s as to how the federal government, the Civil Aeronautics Board at the time, went about setting airfares. I ended up changing my major to economics. Spent a summer as an intern in Washington, D.C., doing researching a paper which was published by a moderate Republican research organization called the Ripon Society, predicting pretty accurately what would happen if the industry was deregulated. Went on to work as in airline pricing for 15 years with TWA in New York, and then ended up moving here 38 years ago to set airfares for Republic Airlines, survived the Northwest merger, but got out of the airline industry in 1991 after Wilson and Checky bought out Northwest. And ever since then, I wanted to keep some fingers in transportation, so I started volunteering to serve on different transportation advisory boards. So I did it for the Transportation Task Force for the Bloomington School District, and then the city's Traffic and Transportation Advisory Board, and then the Met Council's Transportation Advisory Board. Became a city council member in Bloomington and served on the National League of Cities Transportation Committee and the League of Minnesota Cities, Transportation and General Government Committee, and on, until arriving here for, 3 years ago. So, yeah, I'm steeped in this stuff.
Good.
Thanks. Good morning, everyone. Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. My name is Samantha Sensimura. I represent South Minneapolis, District 63A. For people who have been around, this is Jim Dabney's old seat. I'm excited to be on this committee because I believe the transportation is what makes our lives work, or often for low-income communities or communities of color, it's a barrier for making people's lives work. So I come to this work as an economics issue, as an equity issue. I also believe that expanding our transportation options is one of the best things that we can do related to addressing our climate crisis and climate justice. I know that for the city I represent, expanding public transportation options is just absolutely critical to ensuring that our city can survive in the next decade or so. I also come from a community that is having some really important conversations about public safety, and I believe that there are a lot of public safety issues that really intersect with transportation, and there's a lot of things that we can do to make our roads safer for everyone, as I'm sure people can have a lot of anecdotes about from their morning commute, as I did this morning. So happy to be here, happy to get to work.
Welcome, Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So good morning. I'm Larry Kraft. I represent 46A, which is St. Louis Park, previously Ryan Winkler's seat. I am super excited to be on this committee. I kind of come at it from two angles. One, just having been on city council for 3 years, having been very much involved in figuring out our infrastructure challenges on roads, bikeways, sidewalks, et cetera, so, as well as public transit. So I really appreciate Representative Sensimura's points about kind of a holistic view of transportation. And then the other bit for me is I'm very interested in the intersection of transportation and climate change and emissions.
Thank you. Welcome.
Morning, Mr. Chair. I'm Matt Norris. I represent District 32B, which is basically the southern two-thirds of Blaine and Lexington. It's a very transportation-intensive district. We have three major highways, 35W, Highway 10, and Highway 65, running through my district. We have the Anoka Airport in my district, as well as Northtown, which serves as one of the main public transportation hubs in the North Metro. My number one priority this session is Highway 65. I should actually say it's probably my number one, two, and three priority. It is the most dangerous stretch of highway we have in the metro area. It has roughly the same traffic volume as the parallel stretch of 35W up in the North Metro, but imagine putting a stoplight every half mile to mile along 35W and having highly trafficked local roads intersecting each of those half miles or miles, and you can imagine what Highway 65 is like. So looking forward to getting that done for my constituents this session.
Hi, I'm Representative Erin Cagle, and I'm really glad that Representative Norris said that because I'm sure you guys have all heard that from me for the past 6 years or so. So, but my district is 39A, and that's Fridley, Hilltop, Columbia Heights, and Spring Lake Park. This is my third term on transportation, and just really looking forward to doing good work. Sorry I was late. Much like her mother, my daughter is not a morning person. So hopefully we will get better at this getting out the door to school thing.
And Mr. Marble.
Joe Marble, GOP Research. I cover the transportation as well as the Sustainable Infrastructure Committee.
Thank you. So just really appreciate, we have also one other staffer that I'd like to make sure is introduced. Chris, we have a page. Chris, do you want to say a few words?
Hi, I'm Chris Waldorf. This is my session here. On the third day of this half state, and I'm enjoying every minute of it.
Great. Well, a couple of other items before we get into the quick discussion of our committee procedures. I really did enjoy hearing about people's backgrounds and their interests, and it just highlights for me just the geographical diversity and how all of our districts have very unique needs, but that we are united in terms of ensuring that everyone has access to transportation and that we create a transportation system that works for everybody. I failed to say this when we were introducing, but many of you know I am the transportation chair that doesn't drive. It's partly because, yes, I want to make a statement about alternatives to driving and particularly climate-related issues. But the main reason is I'm just a terrible driver. And so when our youngest left the house, I said to my wife, I don't think I really need to drive. She goes, yeah, right. And then, a month into this experiment of not driving, which at that time was an experiment, this was in 2016, I felt so relaxed, and I knew that I was keeping all of you safe. I'm the person that drives 45 on I-94 in the middle of summer when the weather's good. So I think it works out for everyone. But, I unbeknownst to me, Vice Chair Tapke was on the same train coming in, and so we see kind of what's the good and what needs to be improved in our transit system by taking it every day. So just a couple of items that I wanted to just preview in terms of issues that we're going to be grappling with. I mentioned some of the we have incredible needs in terms of our road and bridge infrastructure. We talked about townships and small cities. We are going to need to be looking at, what are the needs and how we can match resources to address those needs. We've just a backlog of so many projects. We also have a historic infusion of federal money that is coming into the state. How are we going to access it, and what are the matching funds? What are the how is this the IIJA and the IRA federal funds? How do they interact with the state, and what's the role of our committee? That's another really important item on the agenda. All aspects of transit and what are options and alternatives? If people want choices in terms of how they get around, how do we make our transit system safer? How do we make it more accessible to people? What are the funding needs there? That's going to be a really important part of our deliberations. And then finally, on the topic of safety, we have increasing issues of speeding and pedestrian deaths that are not necessarily, there's equity issues in that bike pedestrian safety issue. I'm so glad you raised that Representative Sensenbrenner, because this is an item that has just been not discussed enough. And we're going to have lots of safety discussions. Hopefully, with your help, Representative Olson, we'll get it right this time. But this is something that I think, you know, really needs to be front and center, you know, when people are speeding around at 100 plus miles an hour. I think we have Representative Murphy here, and we'll have you introduce yourself. We'll give you some parameters for your introduction. And with that, we'll get into our procedures and then a little transportation 101 from our staff. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm sorry I'm late.
No, that's fine. We understand on a morning like this. We just went around. People introduced themselves, your district, a little bit about your district, any transportation needs, priorities you have, what led you to come to this committee as well. So welcome, and thank you for being here.
Thank you. My name's Tom Murphy, District 9B, which is Eastern Otter Tail County and Western Douglas. And so my background is I've worked for 30 years in agriculture. I have my own business for the last 30 years. Done a lot with ag businesses and related to. I've had a CDL for the last 30 years, and just that my interest in that, I think, is partly why I decided to get involved in the transportation.
Excellent. Well, thank you for that. Well, great. So in your packet, you have committee rules and procedures. This is pretty much standard what we've had every year. I want to just highlight a couple of things. Number one, we are very lucky to be in this room, not only because we get to be in the Capitol and there's high ceilings and it's open and airy, but this is a room that is equipped for hybrid testimony. And, you know, in those of you who are on Representative Cagle's committee, Chair Cagle's committee, we had great testimony from people that joined us from Denver, Colorado. And so that allows us to have folks from out of state. It also allows our constituents who may not be able to make it here to testify. I think that was a real nice part. That was an aspect of the last few years that I think was helpful. But obviously, nothing replaces meeting in person. And I just want to take this opportunity, as we're all in person, to thank the incredible staff. We have some new faces on staff, but there's some old faces that really just went above and beyond the call of duty these last 2 years. You know, Jennifer Nelson, thank you. Joe Marble, thank you. Andy Lee, Matt Burris. I mean, this was not an easy thing to do. Yeah, and, you know, one thing that I'm very happy to dispose of meeting in person that we have to do every remote meeting is take a roll call, right? We're not going to take the roll. What will happen is that our committee legislative assistant will note who's here, and that's that, and it'll be reflected in the minutes. So that's something that we have that we don't have to worry about anymore. But again, the idea, if we have a bill up and you would like constituents or people in the districts you represent to have that option to testify remotely, whether you're near or far to the Capitol, we have that option in this room, and that's not the case in other committees. So I was very happy that when I learned that we had room 120. Then just a couple of items too on process. So we have, as all committees, a 24-hour rule. That means that if you have an amendment to the bill, you need to get it to us. It's not rigid. 8:30 is pretty, you know, early. So it's really a 22-hour rule. But even then, you know, we're flexible. And what happens is that if Representative Petersburg has an amendment from his side, or we have an amendment from our side, we talk about it ahead of time. Is it okay to do this? And usually it is, because these are not, it's a huge controversial amendment, possibly, you know, we would have to address that. But most of the time, these are technical things. It might be just putting in a number. When the fiscal note comes in, we do oral amendments in committee sometimes. Those are not necessarily controversial, just to make sure the author has the bill in a form that we can debate it. So just again, we are flexible, but keep in mind that we have this rule so the public can not be surprised. by what we're doing. And that's why we have that rule on the floor as well. So I just wanted to note that as well. And I don't know if anyone has any questions about these rules, but it's pretty straightforward. Representative Petersburg.
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm going to just reference number five. I've been the vice chair for a couple of terms as well, and so I ran quite a few meetings, and I understand the need to be able to keep the meeting on time and task as well. But I would just offer a caution that we don't limit debate too much, and not debate, testimony too much, because this is one of the opportunities that the public actually gets to be able to talk and express their views. And so I would hope that we don't limit our ability for testifiers to do at least on a regular basis. And I know that you have not in the past, but I'm just kind of saying for all of us that it's a cautionary thing that this is one of the few times in which people will actually be able to talk to legislators and testify in front of us for whatever they think is necessary. So,
right. Thank you, Representative Petersburg, and I completely agree with you. And I think this is this was a rule that I think, or a procedure, a guideline, if you will, that I think was particularly important when we had our remote hearings. It's maybe a little less important now. We often had, sometimes I don't like to do this, but if we need to go a little past 10 o'clock, we will, a few minutes here and there, because I really don't like interrupting people when they're testifying and to tell them, okay, you got to wrap up. Some people, need that guidance, but normally, we had a really hard and fast, it was like 2:30, I remember. We met from 1 to 2:30 during the pandemic, the height of the pandemic. And, we had to just end at 2:30, otherwise the person would be cut off in its sense. So it's less of an issue now. We don't have to be quite as rigid. And then, of course, we just have to, we will be very strategic about ensuring that we don't have too many bills on the agenda. So that's the other time we get, if I have 8 bills, then it does limit testimony because we've got to get through it. Mm-hmm. Thank you for raising this, because this is an announcement I really want to make. Every year we say this, it happens. Hopefully this year will be different, but I know that human nature is such that we put things off and sometimes things get backed up at the revisor that's beyond our control. But if you could get your bills and hearing requests in as early as possible, then we avoid this mid to late March having to meet in the evening, bill after bill after bill. So as much as we can just try to get as much done early, this is sort of when Rule 5 really has to be. But you're right, I don't like it. We just have to maintain some discretion, though.
Thank you.
Making sure our meetings move quickly. Yes. Representative Elkins.
An observation is that Mr. Bear in the revisor's office is already backed up, and so, personally, I'm probably not the only one in this situation, but I've got bills that I submitted for jacketing 6 weeks ago that I don't have yet.
Right. So, it's an argument for getting things in early. Obviously, look, people, we want to be in conversation with our constituents. We want to be in conversation with those who have an interest in transportation issues and making sure that what we submit is what we want, right? That takes time. I get it. But I think, as much as we can get things done early, and that's why I wanted to, the last thing I'll say before we bring on our nonpartisan staff is that, we spend a lot of time doing overview hearings, which are really, really important. And we'll have those. But I really want to start, if bills are ready, let's get going on bills quickly. And so this is the final thing I wanted to say, because I was going to make an announcement at the end, but let's just do it now since we're talking about bills. So we do have a couple of bills already to go next week. So in terms of a roadmap for next week, we'll meet here at our regularly scheduled time on Tuesday, and we'll start hearing a testimony and a bill presentation on House File 4, I believe, Representative Gomez's bill related to driver's licenses for immigrants. And this bill is one that we've heard many times in this committee, but it takes a while. There's a lot of interest. There's a lot of interest on both sides of the aisle, asking questions, making points. And so we're not going to get that bill done in the hour and a half of our committee time. So we will reconvene here. We will recess and reconvene here on Monday, Tuesday at 6 p.m. And we have the room for reserved for 4 hours at that point. I don't know if we'll need the whole 4 hours, but we'll hear some additional public testimony and then possible amendments if they're out there. And then we'll have committee discussion. The committee can ask questions of the author in the morning. And then, of course, we have a debate and discussion in the evening. And, of course, the author will be on hand for additional questions at that time. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, which reminded me that I know that because we have roads and bridges and we have transit and we have ports of authority and air and trains all on our agendas, oftentimes we do have those overviews of those particular agencies in which they give us this nice PowerPoint or presentation, then they read it through for us. And I would just say on our side, I think we're all capable of reading that, so we could shorten that up if necessary in order for us to maintain more space for hearings of bills and so forth.
Complete agreement with you on that. And that's why I'm asking for bills, you know. And on the topic of overviews, it's not just the agencies that we want to hear from. There's other transportation interests that have information that they want to share with us, and we'll ask them to come before the committee as well. But that's why, if we could just get into our business, the overviews could happen potentially in the context of bills as well.
Right, yes. And I just agree that I think we're adults. We can actually read it for ourselves, and we need to be committed to be able to do the homework ourselves, because it just saves a lot of time.
Thank you for making that point, and I completely agree with you. So, members, any other questions about committee rules and procedures? We don't have to vote on this. It's not anything like that. We don't have to amend them. We have an extended conversation about that as well. But and if there's any concerns or questions, please come to me. And our staff will be scheduling some one-to-one meetings between myself and every member on this committee, so I can get to know you better and hear your ideas and concerns. So with that, members, we have about 40 minutes or so, 40, 45 minutes before we get, again, for those who came late, we're breaking early because we have session at 10. Fortunately, we're in the Capitol building. It won't take long to get there, but I don't want people like running, so we'll break at about 9:45, 9:50. And I've asked Mr. Burris and Mr. Lee to give us a sort of a transportation finance 101. Some questions are, what is the jurisdiction of this committee? What are some of the transportation funding formulas? How do we interact with some of our agencies? And so there is a handout, and I will just call on Mr. Lee and Mr. Burris to guide us through a transportation finance overview. Welcome to the committee in person.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Again, I'm Matt Burris with House Research, and I'm joined by Mr. Lee with House Fiscal. As the chair noted, we were asked to provide a brief overview of transportation finance. For members who have heard from us on this topic in the past, this will be a much more abbreviated version. I'll just note at the outset, we'll be covering highway and transit as the focus, as well as some discussion around the legislative budgeting process. There are certainly other areas and more detail to transportation finance that we won't get into it at this point, but we're certainly available for questions. There are also some write-up informational documents that I believe will be distributed probably by email or possibly physical copies at the next committee hearing that go into some further detail on some of these topics. So this is pretty high level to start you off. And I'll begin on the highway side, just to provide a little bit of general context about the roadway systems in Minnesota. There are a number of different jurisdictions at the state and local level, counties, cities, towns, and each have oversight over their respective road systems. So the trunk highway system is administered by the state, the Department of Transportation. And that includes trunk highways, which is a broad number, broad term referring to state highways. That also includes the interstate system and the U.S. highway system. And then local units of government have their jurisdictions over county highways, municipal, you know, local streets, town roads. Within that, at the county level, there's some further delineation. And one of significance is the county state aid highway system. And it's a portion of the county highways where funding from state revenues is allocated to the counties. Similarly, somewhat parallel to that, there's a municipal state aid street system with state funding going towards some of the municipal streets. So in general, the highway, the structure for highway finance has a kind of combination of statutory requirements as well as constitutional requirements underlying that. And there's a surprising number of funds, formulas, distributions. We won't go through all of those, but again, that's something we can provide further information on. Just kind of touch on the broad flow in this initial overview. So there's quite a bit of formula-driven allocation of particularly the state dollars that go towards highways. In general, this is all outside of the state's general fund. There are some appropriations on a one-time basis that have gone to highways. You'll actually see that in an upcoming chart a little bit. But the majority of the general fund appropriations in transportation are for other areas like transit, the state patrol within the Department of Public Safety, a couple of examples. So unlike many aspects of state government budgets, the general fund is it's a notable portion, but quite a bit of the dollars are through other funds of the state as far as what the legislature tends to look at in highway financing. One piece of the constitutional structure is the creation of the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. This is something of a holding fund. So they're constitutionally identified revenue streams, and those dollars, for the most part, go into the HUTD, Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. And it works something like a pass-through, and it's one of these pieces of the formula-based allocation of funds. So revenue flows into the HUTD and then out to other funds. So there are three core highway funds that receive the revenue from the HUTD. These are also constitutionally established. The first is the Trunk Highway Fund, and that's for the state trunk highway system. The second is for the county state aid highway, or into the county state aid highway fund. That's the county system of roads that receive some state assistance. And then there's a parallel municipal state aid street fund for city streets. I'll just pause it. It's not in a slide, but I'll just note that generally in talking about highways, really referring to that in the broad sense of highways and bridges. So usually, sometimes there are programs that are bridge specific, but in general, talking about highways, usually I'm referring, and a lot of the laws in state statute and state law are often referring to streets, highways, bridges, all of the associated infrastructure around those systems, so at the state and local level. Sometimes there are further distinctions, but I just thought it occurred to me I might note that terminology. So there are three core sources of state highway funding. The first is a tax on motor fuels. The second is an annual tax on motor vehicle registration, or also known as TAB fees. And then the third is a tax on motor vehicle sales, or MVES, the motor vehicle sales tax. There's some other state sources that are comparatively smaller that are, and also are somewhat more recent from a historical standpoint. There are a couple of different state sales tax streams including portions of the general sales tax, a specific tax on motor vehicle rentals, and a general sales tax that's attributed to motor vehicle leases. So that one is commonly referred to as the motor vehicle lease sales tax, although technically it's not a separate tax as part of general sales taxes. And then there are appropriations from the general fund that, as I mentioned, tend to be occasional one-time in recent history of legislative budgeting. This next slide shows a general flow or overview of how the dollars in highway finance add up and move around. So that first top row of boxes shows the core revenue streams, and then the flow into the HUTD and then back out to the county, municipal, local systems, as well as to the Trunk Highway Fund, and then a couple of the other sources and uses. And I note there are some caveats, I won't go through them all, but this shows kind of the general flow. This is for fiscal year 2022. So it's a one-time snapshot from the fiscal year that ended on June 30th of 2022. Just recall that the state budget fiscal year cycle runs from each July 1st to the following June 30th, and the fiscal year references the year of the calendar year of the ending point in June. So this is fiscal year 22. It's the last closed fiscal year. And it does have, for instance, some general fund in that second row box. Those were largely one-time appropriations that went to various local road, local bridge program, kind of local programming. One other aspect of highway finance that's, that wasn't shown in that flow chart but is also worth noting is bonds. So one of the reasons it wasn't shown in that chart is conceptually, I would suggest thinking about bonds as a form of debt or borrowing rather than being a revenue stream, because it's funds that are made available at a point that then need to be repaid through, you know, debt service payments in the future. There are a number of constitutional aspects and requirements and limitations, and bonding in general is a function of constitutional structure. Bonds are authorized legislatively, so there's, you know, traditionally in many years, a capital investment bill that authorizes bonds that's enacted by the legislature. In some years, there's nothing enacted. But there's a notable distinction in the types of bonds. One is for the trunk highway system specifically, and this comes, again, from constitutional requirements. So those are referred to as trunk highway bonds. And the other form is just general obligation bonds, or GO bonds, which are available to finance capital projects on local roads. I'd also note that bonds are used for various other things beyond just transportation, and are used in the transportation realm for transit and other modes, which kind of brings us to the next piece of the presentation.
And Mr. Chair and members, Andrew Lee again from House Fiscal Staff. I'll be covering transit finance and give the committee members an overview of the committee's budget authority and a look at what 2 years ago the tracking sheet for the last transportation omnibus bill was. So switching gears to transit finance, unlike the state trunk highway system, transit service in Minnesota is provided by local units of government, so most state appropriations to fund transit kind of operate as state aids. In outside the metro, there are over 40 transit systems of various sizes, types, ridership, structure, it varies, and they can be provided by cities, counties, or joint powers boards. To the next slide. In the Twin Cities metro, transit service is provided by a few different providers, the largest being the Metropolitan Council, which is a bit of a hybrid state agency political subdivision. And then there's also City and Joint Powers Board transit service provided by the suburban transit providers, sometimes colloquially known as opt-outs. There's also some smaller providers, such as the University of Minnesota for intercampus buses. But the largest provider is the Metropolitan Council with Metro Transit, some contracted bus service, and then the Metro Mobility ADA paratransit service. Moving to the next slide. So there's a few different types of appropriations for transit. The one that shows up the most in the transportation budget bill are direct appropriations. So that's where the legislature writes in, passes a bill, says this is the amount, this is the fund, this is where it goes. And direct appropriations last for up to two years. They need to be passed every 2 years or in a supplemental year to take effect. The other type of appropriation is a statutory appropriation. So this is where the legislature has in law said this funding stream from this specific tax, and we'll get into the motor vehicle sales tax in a little bit, goes for transit. So however much that revenue source brings in is what goes to transit as an aid. But the legislature doesn't need to act every 2 years for that to happen. So going to the next slide. So some sources of funding for transit, like roads, there's multiple different sources. There are federal programs for both operating and capital for transit. There's the state appropriations, which will be talked about most in this committee. Then there's also local sources of revenue for transit. They include property tax, local option sales tax, and then also generated revenue. So that's things like fare box, advertising, and so forth. So the largest state source of support for transit is a portion of the motor vehicle sales tax. So in per the constitutional language, 60% of the motor vehicle sales tax goes to the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund for highways, and 40% goes to roads. There's a little bit of flexibility in the constitutional language that says no less than 40% for transit and no more than 60% for roads. But the current statutory distribution has 36% of that total going to the metropolitan area and 4% for non-metropolitan transit. Then there's general fund appropriations. That are enacted as direct appropriations every 2 years for both the Metropolitan Council and to MnDOT as a disperser of aid to non-metro transit agencies. The motor vehicle lease sales tax provides a portion of revenue for non-metro transit, and also in general obligation bonding bills, there have been capital projects for transit as well. So moving to the next slide, this is an overview of the components of state government that fall under this committee's jurisdiction. So there's all of the Department of Transportation, that includes the state's highway system, the trunk highways, local aids for counties and cities, transit and active transportation for Greater Minnesota, and then the State Aeronautics Fund. And there's a few other much smaller appropriations that are funded in this committee, mostly out of the general fund for freight, rail, and things like that under the Department of Transportation. Then this committee also has a portion of the Metropolitan Council that is related to transit that's funded from both the general fund and the motor vehicle sales tax. And finally, on the next slide, this committee has a portion of the Department of Public Safety. So the largest piece of that is the State Patrol, which is funded from both the Trunk Highway Fund and the General Fund. The General Fund portion is specific for capital area security. The committee also has jurisdiction over the Department of Driver and Vehicle Services. So that's the division of the Department of Public Safety that handles all driver's license transactions, vehicle titles, things of that nature, And unlike other components of the Department of Transportation or Department of Public Safety, driver and vehicle services is almost entirely a fee-based division. So the fees that you pay during each of those transactions are what this committee typically appropriates to pay for those services. Then there's some more miscellaneous pieces of the Department of Public Safety. The administrative portion, the Office of Traffic Safety, and the Office of Pipeline Safety. So switching gears now, in your packet you should have a legal size piece of paper that looks like this. I think there might be some small letter size ones, and I apologize if it's hard to read those, but if you have the legal size one, that's hopefully a little bit easier to read. So I won't go line by line on this whole spreadsheet, but just give you kind of an overview of how you would read this. When the governor's recommendations come out later this month, you'd see a tracking sheet similar to this to show what the governor is proposing as compared to what was enacted last biennium, what is the base budget, and then obviously when the House has its bill, you'd see a comparison with the House, a comparison with the Senate, and then finally agreement either in conference committee or in special session. So just to tell you how to read the spreadsheet, on the right-hand side you see the various appropriations by agency and by division of that agency. So right at the top of the spreadsheet, it starts with the Department of Transportation under multimodal systems and then for aeronautics. Then moving to column B, you see the fund. And then you see the previous biennium, the base for, now the spreadsheet that you're looking at is for 2 years ago, and then the governor's recommendations, the House position, the Senate position, and then what was agreed on in the first special session, Chapter 5. So again, I won't read line by line, but just to give you a little bit more orientation, so you can see the first two appropriation lines going to the appropriation on line 21, that's what's being appropriated by the legislature, so that number is all that would show up in the actual bill. But the point of the spreadsheet is to show you what's changing, how that is proposed to change, and so forth. So you can see on line 17, change item. So this is an addition to the base budget. So you can see that there was a $5.6 million general fund appropriation for the Carlstead Airport runway. That was one time. So moving down, I'll just highlight a few of the larger funding areas. So there's aviation, and then starting on line 40, there's Greater Minnesota Transit. Then on line 55, there's Safe Routes to School. On line 62, passenger rail. And then at the top of page 2 is the freight appropriation. And so you can see that a lot of proposed change items there. And then moving down, the largest appropriations in transportation are the next few lines on state roads, starting on line 99. So you can see the operations and maintenance appropriation for MnDOT. That's the appropriation that funds snow plows, patching potholes on trunk highways. And then the planning and research appropriation on line 116. Then on page 3, the program delivery, so that's engineering, design, right-of-way acquisition. And then the largest single appropriation is on line 145 for state road construction. That's all just spending money for contracts, essentially. Then an appropriation for Recorders of Commerce, and then Trunk Highway Debt Service, and then there's a few smaller appropriations for radio communications. And then if you go to page 4, you can see the local road appropriations. So this is where you'll see in the fund type in column B, the abbreviation CASA for County State Aid Highway, and MSAS for Municipal State Aid Streets. And then there's a few kind of miscellaneous local road appropriations from the budget bill 2 years ago. So you can see a line for small cities and local road improvement and local bridge. And then there's agency management at the bottom of that page. And at the top of page 5 is the MnDOT appropriation for buildings. That's district headquarters, salt sheds, truck stations, things like that. Then skipping forward, there's totals for the Department of Transportation. And then you see the two appropriations for the Metropolitan Council. So one for system operating. This is largely for operating the transitways. So that's light rail, commuter rail, or a portion of those. And you can also see a large one-time appropriation on line 282 for arterial bus rapid transit, that $57.5 million. Then on the next appropriation for the Metropolitan Council, Metro Mobility, you mentioned that's the ADA paratransit service at about $112 million a biennium. And then moving on, you see the portion of the Department of Public Safety in the committee's jurisdiction. So you'd see the first few appropriations on page 6 are admin and related services, communications, public safety support, peace officer survivor benefits, soft body armor reimbursements, and technology and support and services. And then on the next page, on page 7, you can see the state patrol appropriations. So you can see, again, a lot of proposals for change items here, starting on line 364. And then commercial vehicle enforcement, and then capital security. And so the thing to note here is that capital security is all general fund appropriations. And then the vehicle crimes unit. And then on the next page, on page 8, are the Department of Driver and Vehicle Services. So you'll notice that the appropriations here are almost exclusively out of the Special Revenue Fund. That's the fee-based based system that this division is financed out of. So you can see driver services and vehicle services. And again, these are areas that have a lot of change items. So a lot of bills will commonly have some cost to either the driver and vehicle services, if you want to change something in a driver's license or some way that vehicle transactions are processed, that would show up here. So then on the last page of the tracking, there's a, on page 9, there's traffic safety and hazardous substance preparedness appropriations. And then I'll skip over page 10. There's a few miscellaneous items, other agencies, and then go to page 12. And this is proposed changes in revenue. So if the bill in this committee were to change the rates of the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund, change a tax, or change a general fund appropriation to the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund, it would show up here. So you can see the House had a number of proposals around changing tax amounts in 2 years ago, and the Senate had a few changes around the motor vehicle, the auto parts sales tax portion of the general fund. So you see all those changes. That goes through by agency, and then there is a summary of general fund appropriations on the last page. And again, I understand that there's a lot of detail in this, and I'm always happy to answer questions, but that just so you, when you see the spreadsheet in the future, you kind of have a sense of what you're looking at. So with that, we'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Yes. Thank you, Mr. Burris and Mr. Lee. That was very helpful. Amazing how much information you were able to condense in a short amount of time. And I think as per Representative Petersburg's comments, I mean, please feel free to always ask our staff questions as we orient ourselves, both old and new faces. We can't go through this enough because it's complicated and there's a lot of information. I always joke with Mr. Lee that he should go out as a spreadsheet for Halloween. I think that would be pretty scary. Anyway, and this is great. I don't think there's other finance committees where they teach you how to read a spreadsheet, so this is great. Our first question is from Vice Chair Tabke.
All right, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. If you go to the 15 in the PowerPoint, page 15, where it has the transit finance and state funding sources on things, as we have been talking a lot recently about the budget surplus and where we're at on that, how are these funds looking? And just, I don't need specific numbers at all, just how are they trending currently? Are they going up or down with our surplus, or what do they look like today? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair and Representative Tabke, yes, the motor vehicle sales tax is, I'm looking at the transportation funds forecast, and that's a supplemental document that it might be helpful to that we'll send to the committee. Currently, the motor vehicle sales tax brings in for the transit component about $410 million a year on the highway side, since it's about 40%, 60% for highways. So that would be about $600 and some million on the highway side. But on the transit side, the estimate is around $410 a year, and that is a slight decrease from previous forecasts. And again, I can get you the details, but it's a decline of about $20 million from the previous forecast in November, in February. And then, as far as the motor vehicle lease sales tax, there's also a slight decline. That's a little bit more complicated to call out. It's
actually an increase.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's right. It's an increase over of the tax year over year in actuals that are coming in, but the forecast growth is less than previous forecasts. I should clarify that. Thank you, Matt. And then the motor vehicle lease sales tax is estimated to generate about $67 million, but that's split between multiple different sources. So there's a portion that goes to local roads, a portion that goes to the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund, and a portion that goes to Greater Minnesota Transit. But that's, it's about holding steady at about $67 million a year.
Thank you.
Thank you, Vice Chair Tabke. Our next question comes from Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is just one of understanding. There's the column called base, and I noticed that sometimes it's a little bit above and sometimes it's a little bit below. Why? Who sets the base? So maybe a basic question, but it would be helpful to understand.
Certainly, Mr. Chair and Representative Kraft, the base is set by the legislature for the biennium after the one that the legislature is budgeting for. So the legislature will be budgeting for the fiscal 24-25 biennium in this year, and then it will set a base for the 26-27 biennium, but it's not spending, it's just basically a place on the spreadsheet of this is the amount that the legislature will assume to start at in the next biennium. So a base is essentially planning. Sometimes it's also referred to as the tails, but a base is, like I said, just a starting point. It is not a promise of an appropriation, it's just where the legislature starts and where the executive branch is forced to assume the level of spending will be in the next 2 years after the one they're being budgeted for.
Thank you.
Representative Cagle, Chair Cagle. I have to get in the habit of saying Chair Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the last budget we allocated, it looks like about $2 billion for HUTD. The question I'm getting at here is how much did we authorize for last time around versus how much we have in the account because the federal funds increase?
Mr. Chair and Representative Cagle, the total appropriation, and you can find this on page 11, for the various funds, you'd see online 563, the total direct appropriation in this omnibus bill was $7,274,000,000 for that biennium. And you can see the largest piece of that, $4.4 billion, is Highway User Tax Distribution Fund, Trunk Highway. And then the next biggest pieces are the County State Aid Highway and the Municipal State Aid Streets. In terms of federal funds, the largest piece of federal funds that flow to the state for roads is appropriated out of the Trunk Highway Fund. It doesn't show up in a fund balance statement necessarily, but it's dollars that the legislature would have to appropriate in order for MnDOT to be able to spend those Trunk Highway dollars.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Cagle. Are there any other questions or just overall comments, thoughts? Going once, going twice? Okay, well, before we adjourn, and that is our next item of business, I want to thank our staff and also want a special thank you for Ms. Schmidt for filling in. It's hard to, it's like kind of a relief pitcher coming in on very short notice. So I appreciate that a lot. So just to review again next week, Tuesday morning at our normal committee time, we will start the process of hearing House File 4, the driver's license for all bill, Representative Gomez. And then I don't remember if I said this or not, but then Thursday we also have a important bill that we're going to be hearing in our normal committee time here, House File 26, Chair Cagle's bill, and that's an appropriation for the IIJA for formula and discretionary grant programs. And we're going to use that opportunity for the committee to get a briefing on the current state of the IIJA. That's the federal bipartisan federal infrastructure bill that was passed in November 2021. And we may touch on the IRA, Inflation Reduction Act bill as well. But we're going to really spend most of our time on IIJA on Thursday. So that's the plan for next week. And I know we'll talk further about that in terms of amendments and whatnot. So with that, there's no further business before the committee. We stand adjourned.